Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Anna DeVlantis joins us now for This Week in Chicago History, and we'll start with the anniversary of our favorite city hall accomplishment. Anna?
Yeah, the deal we love to hate in Chicago, Bob, the parking meter deal. This is the anniversary. Yay, happy anniversary. December 4th, 2008 is when City Hall under Daley signed off on the maneuver that privatized our 36,000 plus city parking meters, signing them away all the revenue for 75 years. They did it in just 72 hours, just in time for Christmas, Bob, the gift that keeps on giving, keeps on giving. So every time we park, we know someone's making a lot of money, and the meter money goes to Wall Street investment firms and the Abu Dhabi investment company that cut the deal with the city. So that doesn't make it easier. The history is just that to be fair, in history, Mayor Daley needed a source of income to plug a major budget gap during the housing crisis of 2008, and he knew he couldn't go to taxpayers for it, so he cut the parking meter deal, generating this quick $1.15 billion. And that's already been paid back to, you know, the investors who invested, and now they're profiting the billions of dollars for years to come. I think the worst part too for us is that parking rates have just spiked over the years, mm-hmm. you know, dramatically. Some areas it's just really expensive to park, right?
Yeah, it keeps going up, doesn't it? It solved a short-term problem, I guess, huh?
It did. It was a short-term finger-in-the-dam kind of solution, but the long-term effects we're all feeling. I actually was down for the Magmile Lights Festival, and we stayed in a hotel. And the overnight parking, I'm like, oh, great, I found street parking. It was like $56 for overnight street parking. I didn't even know that existed, Bob. I couldn't get that expensive.
Same as parking in the hotel. That's crazy.
Right, it's the same. And it's on the street, so I thought I was cool. Boring, I wasn't. No. But anyway, you know, there are many audits, many investigative journalism pieces have gone on this, as you know, and just there's nothing you can do. Mayor Emanuel tried to sue. There's just not much we can do with it. We're sort of stuck with it.
Well, this is a better anniversary to talk about Illinois becoming the 21st state.
This is 1818 was the year, Bob. You're right. Happy birthday, Illinois. This is when it happened. It's just interesting to look at the history here as people were moving westward from the eastern seaboard. The major driver then was agricultural opportunity. Could you farm land and support your family? And so people were heading to Kentucky, Tennessee, and Ohio, but they were fearful, kind of suspicious of the prairie, these vast treeless stretches of land, believing that ground was less fertile and couldn't be farmed. Well, they were sure wrong. Highly resourceful, tough early farmers came out here and were able to farm the ground, farm the land, and break up the thickly knotted root systems that existed and create new plows, superior plows to do it, and really were rewarded for that. So a lot of the early Illinois settlers went to the south of the state. Illinois was granted statehood in 1818, and the population back then was 35,000. 20 years later, it was 500,000. By 1850, it was about 1 million, and Chicago was starting to be this bustling city of trade right there on Lake Michigan. So pretty cool history.
Grew in a hurry. 12 years ago, it was a big day for Mike Ditka and Bears fans, wasn't it?
Yeah, over at Soldier Field, Bob, this is 2013. Mike Ditka's jersey was retired during a blustery Bears victory at Soldier Field. Happened to be one of the coldest Bears games on record. 8 degrees, -9 wind chill, feels like -20. And Ditka wasn't even wearing a hat, no earmuffs, no scarf, nothing like that. That's Ditka for you. No big deal. Bears organization did it, but Bob, during Monday Night Football, December 9th, 2013. And they called it Mike Ditka Night. So there were fan tributes, a video montage, Ditka's greatest moments as a player, as a coach, the Super Bowl, of course. Then before they retired the number 89 jersey at halftime, Mike Ditka stepped up to the mic to address fans. We pulled a clip.
No hat, no coat, but I'm sure he was wearing one of his great sweaters.
Yeah, right, underneath that jacket, I'm sure he had one of those beautiful sweaters that are emulated by so many Bears fans to this day.
That is an all-Chicago song, isn't it, Anna?
No question, Bob. It's just so fascinating, the history of that iconic song, released as a single this week, 1970. Wouldn't be Christmas time without hearing that song. I don't think one has gone by in recent history that we haven't heard it, but it was written by a Chicago mail carrier named Nadine McKinner. She wrote it after being inspired by the downtown window displays at Marshall Fields. She had this kind of festive holiday season thing on her brain, she said, that she wrote a poem about it. She was a poetry and writer at home, like just as a hobby. And then she said she's sorting mail during a blizzard with some colleagues. She starts humming along to her song. And before you know it, she created it. She wanted a new kind of Christmas song. You know, you think about chestnuts roasting on an open fire and I'll be home for Christmas, evoke all that nostalgic warmth of the holidays. She said this Christmas is a relationship song. It's memorable and I guess highly relatable. It's been covered 400 times since she wrote it. Chicago artist Donny Hathaway was the first to record it in a Chicago studio. We pulled a clip of postal worker writer Nadine McKinner talking about her famous song to WGN just about a year ago.
This Christmas, that studio, which is not there anymore, was right on Ontario Street here, wasn't it?
Yeah. Interesting just to think all of the Chicago roots to that song and how it's just been covered over the years, Bob, by just so many major artists. Gladys Knight, The Temptations, Ariana Grande, George Michael, B.B. King all recorded their versions. Hard to spot a Christmas, you know, special without some memory of that song or some sort of tribute.
Mm-hmm. Donny Hathaway made it big. Let's talk about one good Samaritan who changed Christmas.
You know, I just love this one, Bob. It's just such a great story. I'm not sure I knew of before I had, you know, started doing research for this for you. But a Good Samaritan in 1909 really changed Christmas for thousands and thousands of needy children across the Chicago area in a tradition that continued for decades and still exists in some form today. One letter he sent to the Chicago Tribune changed everything. The Chicago man wrote an open letter that was published in the Tribune, and he said, "Last Christmas and New Year's Eve, you and I went out for a good time, and we probably spent between $10 and $200, depending on where you went. But last Christmas morning, over 5,000 children awoke to an empty stocking, the bitter pain of disappointment that Santa had forgotten them." And he followed up with a call to action. He's like, "Send your name and address to the Tribune. State how many kids you're able to help. Enclose a 2-cent stamp, and you'll get the names and addresses of kids across the Chicago area who could use your help." He signed the letter simply, "Good Fellow." That appeal was printed in the Trib December 10th, 1909. By December 16th, more than 14,000 children were on Santa's list to get presents. And, I mean, Tribune had to set up an entire staff of, like, newsroom elves to create the number of people needed to, you know, field all the letters that were coming in and the people who wanted to help. So on Christmas Day, 1909, 15,000 children were served, and the Good Fellows program continued. It kind of morphed into Chicago Tribune Charities later. The Tribune never, by the way, Bob, never printed the name of the anonymous letter writer who, basically, you could say this was like one of the first crowdsourcing events that he created. And the reason why they didn't was because he said in his letter that no one should get any satisfaction or recognition from this other than knowing that you helped a child. And if that's not good for you, good enough, then you've wasted your time reading this. And that this is intended for the, quote, good fellows of Chicago. So still anonymous.
Yeah, one good Samaritan started it all. And finally, this week in 1953, it was the first sighting of Chicago's favorite snowflake, wasn't it?
Yeah, did you know Snoozy Susie Snowflake? Did you watch her on WGN?
Of course, yeah.
It's just from the 1950s, 1953, this week, early December, all the way through the early 70s. For those who didn't know, Susie Snowflake was the sign that Christmas was here and it was time to get excited. So during the Ray Rayner or Garfield Goose and Friends show, they paused to run this animated short, Susie Snowflake, that was created in Chicago and broadcast. We pulled a clip here, sir. Remember.
Wow, that stirs up a lot of memories and emotion. It really does.
I bet it does. I hear that from so many people that was the beginning. You knew Christmas was here, and that just beautiful thing. Very cool invention.
Anna DeLattis, This Week in Chicago History. More next Wednesday. Thanks, Anna.
Thanks, Bob.